You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
On Deck Business Loans for up to $250,000. Apply in just minutes. Approval in as quickly as 2 hours. Go to ondeck.com.au today.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Hello and welcome to Dwayne's World. Great to have your company wherever you might be listening around the planet. Dwayne's World for On Deck Business Loans, up to $250,000 through On Deck Business Loans. And it is Midday Madness time where we take your calls normally, but we're going to break with the normal format because AFL CEO Andrew Dillon is not far away from chatting. And then it'll be your calls on that open line brought to us by Werribee Kia at 1300 736 736. Werribee Kia's biggest ever EV sale is on now at Werribee Kia. And much of what's happened today is much of what Midday Madness and Dwayne's World was designed around, and that is taking your calls. Get the reaction from the fans. Get an understanding of what the fans think about what's happening in their world of sport. So we'll be doing that with you, as is the normal plan, very shortly on 1300 736 736. And we'll be taking your texts. I'll be reading a heap of your texts, 0433 98 11 16, on that text machine brought to us by the all-new Temper Pro. Temper's most adaptive mattress ever is here. Temper mattresses like no other. You can check out the Temper range at your local 40 Winks. But as you have heard earlier today, the AFL has put out a statement and they're about to front a press conference with Andrew Dillon at the microphone. So we'll bring you that. It's not yet taking place. It might be a couple of minutes away. If you haven't heard the statement, if you didn't hear the bits that Jared read out earlier. So the AFL's media statement in reaction to the story broken by Michael Warner in the newspapers last night and after what was tabled verbally at Parliament yesterday, the AFL's media statement, as well as being a signatory to World Anti-Doping Agency WADA code via the Australian Football Anti-Doping Code, the AFL has an illicit drug policy which has been in place since 2005, and at the core of the policy is a commitment to player welfare and well-being. The AFL illicit drug policy is a policy that specifically deals with the use of illicit substances out of competition and is focused on player health and well-being. The policy seeks to reduce substance abuse or substance use and drug-related harms for AFL players and aims to inform and rehabilitate players through education and intervention. It exists alongside and in addition to the Australian Football Anti-Doping Code, which covers prohibited substances, including some illicit substances, in competition as prescribed by the WADA prohibited list. Urine tests conducted by doctors to determine if a player has used illicit substances are part of the AFL's illicit drug policy medical model and have been for some time. Doctors may use those urine tests to obtain an immediate result to determine whether any illicit substance remains in a player's system. This is normally conducted at the club or in the doctor's consulting rooms. If the test shows a substance is still in the player's system, a doctor will take steps to prevent a player from taking part in either training and or an AFL match, both for their own health and welfare and because having illicit substances in your system on match day may be deemed performance enhancing and a breach of the Australian Football Anti-Doping Code, depending on the substance involved, in brackets. So, as I read the rest of this statement, and we're about to go to Andrew Dillon, it is absolutely imperative that no doctor or club official should ever allow or encourage a player to take the field knowing they have recently taken an illicit substance that may be harmful to their health and or may be deemed performance enhancing. We support the WADA code as it applies to our sport through the Australian Football Anti-Doping Code, and support the fundamental premise on which it is founded, that any player who takes the field with a performance-enhancing prohibited substance in their system should be treated in accordance with the Anti-Doping Code and face heavy sanctions. The AFL observes that the AFL players are not immune to the social issues faced by young people and with respect to illicit substances, and also acknowledges that the illicit drug use problems commonly co-occur with other mental health conditions. While the AFL's medical model involves a multidisciplinary healthcare management plan, the monitoring of players is highly confidential. A doctor or healthcare professional generally cannot disclose the nature of the clinical intervention or condition to others unless the player willingly consents. The statement finishes by saying, "We understand that the illicit drugs policy can be improved, and we are working with the AFLPA and players to improve the policy and the system to ensure we are better able to change the behaviours of players, but we are unapologetic about the club and AFL doctors taking the correct steps to ensure that any player who they believe has an illicit substance in their system does not take part in any AFL match, and that doctor-patient confidentiality is upheld and respected. The AFL will always be required to make decisions which seeks to balance competing rights and interests. The medical interests and welfare of players is a priority for the AFL, given everything we know about the risks facing young people generally and those who play our game in particular." That is the AFL statement. Let's head to Andrew Dillon now. We're bringing this live from AFL House.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks, everyone. As well as being a signatory to the World Anti-Doping Agency Code via the Australian Football Anti-Doping Code, the AFL has an illicit drugs policy which has been in place since 2005, and at the core of that policy is a commitment to player wellbeing and welfare. The AFL illicit drug policy is a policy that specifically deals with the use of illicit substances out of competition and is focused on player health and wellbeing. The policy seeks to reduce substance use and drug-related harm for AFL players and aims to inform and rehabilitate players through education and intervention. It exists alongside and in addition to the Australian Football Anti-Doping Code, which covers substances, prohibited substances, including some illicit substances in competition as prescribed by the WADA prohibited list. Urine tests conducted by doctors to determine if a player has used illicit substances are part of the AFL's illicit drug policy medical model and have been for some time. Doctors may use those urine tests to obtain an immediate result to determine whether any illicit substance remains in a player's system. This is normally conducted at the club or in the doctor's consulting rooms. If the test shows a substance is still in the player's system, a doctor will take steps to prevent a player from taking part in either training and or an AFL match, both for their own health and welfare, and because having an illicit substance in your system on match day may be deemed performance enhancing and a breach of the Australian Football Anti-Doping Code. It is absolutely imperative that no doctor or club official should ever allow or encourage a player to take the field knowing they have recently taken an illicit substance that may be harmful to their health and or may be deemed performance enhancing. We support the WADA code as it applies to our sport through the Australian Football Anti-Doping Code, and support the fundamental premise on which it is founded that any player who takes the field with a performance enhancing substance, prohibited substance in their system, should be treated in accordance with the Anti-Doping Code and face heavy sanctions. The AFL observes that AFL players are not immune to the societal issues faced by young people with respect to illicit substances, and also acknowledges that illicit drug use problems commonly co-occur with other mental health conditions. While the AFL's medical model involves a multidisciplinary healthcare management plan, the monitoring of players is highly confidential. A doctor or healthcare professional generally cannot disclose the nature of the clinical intervention or condition to others unless the player consents. We understand the illicit drug policy can be improved, and we are working with the AFLPA and our players to improve the policy and the system to ensure we are better able to change the behaviour of players. But we are unapologetic about club and AFL doctors taking the correct steps to ensure that any player who they believe has an illicit substance in their system does not take place in any AFL match, and the doctor-patient confidentiality is upheld and respected. The AFL will always be required to make decisions which seek to balance competing rights and interests. The medical interests and welfare of our players is a priority for the AFL, given everything we know about the risks facing young people generally and those who play our game in particular. Thank you.
Happy to take questions.
So if the player tests positive, are you aware that clubs are instructing them to lie about their condition and fake injuries?
Look, as I said before, the private medical information of the players is private medical information, and that's what we prioritise above anything else.
Where does the AFL stand then on what are instructions to say whether it's injury or mental health?
Well, what we're talking about is a doctor and a player who's their patient, and private medical information of that player, which is the private medical information of that player, and it's that player's decision to disclose or not.
So, Andrew, in the pre-season, the AFL made it very clear that it wasn't more transparent injuries around. But this is an example of the AFL not being transparent, or clubs not being transparent, with why players aren't missing games. How can we fix that?
Well, Tom, as I said a couple of times now, it is private medical information, and it's the player's private medical information. I've said we are reviewing the illicit drugs policy. It's been in place since 2005. It's had various amendments made to it over that time. But what we want to make sure with our players and the AFLPA is that we have a policy that is fit for purpose for 2024 and beyond, and that will be, you know, that will be part of the review. Look, we are, as I said, we've got competing rights and interests. The private medical information of the players is their private medical information. And also what we're talking about here is a small handful of players over a year. Look, as I said, it's private medical information of the players. It's their information. And we're talking about a small handful of the 1,300 athletes that we have across the AFL and AFLW. It's private medical information of the players.
You said these tests normally take place at a club, but you use the word normal. So is it an issue that they take place elsewhere as well?
No, because we have we have two policies in place. We've got the AFL anti-doping code, and they're tests that are conducted by Sports Integrity Australia. We have the AFL illicit drugs policy, where we have tests that are performed at the club by Dorovich, but sometimes those tests might take place at other venues. Then we've also got the hair testing that's done under the illicit drugs policy, and then we have the clinical intervention model, which is conducted by the doctors, which might be in the doctor's rooms or they might be at the club.
So the club's doing extra off-the-books testing?
What we have is testing under the clinical intervention model, which is done by the doctors. Look, that's under the current iteration of the policy. That's not information that we provide. As I said, the policy is under review. Look, I think there's a difference between what the public is interested in and what's in the public interest. And we've had there's been cases on that over the journey, and the findings of in those cases has been that the private, the doctor patient confidentiality is paramount and should be prioritised.
Is
the
Melbourne's a fundamentally different way that now people, someone is injured, that a random person would now think, one person would think that potentially because of a positive drug test and they've got drugs in their system. Do you not see an issue with that?
Look, I've said it a number of times. We're talking about a very small handful of players, and it is private medical information.
Has the Melbourne Football Club done anything by
As I said, it's been part of the illicit drugs policy, the clinical intervention tests, and they will continue to happen because what we're trying to do is prioritise the health and safety of our players. We don't want our players, if there's a chance that they might have a substance in their system, we don't want them training and we don't want them taking part in matches for their health and welfare above anything else.
Is that cheating the
We've got two codes. We've got the AFL anti-doping code and the AFL illicit drugs policy, and the clinical intervention model allows for the doctors have to make that call in conjunction with the player. As I said a number of times, it's the private medical information of those players.
What's the timeline of this review?
The review is ongoing, but we are hopeful that we will come to a landing with the Players Association throughout this year for a illicit drugs policy that would take place from then.
Do you think you need to expedite the review,
though? I think what we need to do is make sure that we have a policy that is fit for purpose for 2024 and 25 and beyond. I think that's more important.
Not fit right now.
I think that we've got a policy that's been in place for 19 years. I think it's worked really well, and it continues to work well. And as I said, it's about rehabilitation and intervention, and it has made, over the 19 years it's been in place, it's made a difference to a number of players' lives. And I've said it before, if it was only one or two players, it would be worth it, but I know that it's been more than that. So it has worked, it continues to work, but it could be better, and that's why we're reviewing it. I haven't heard that. The only thing I'll say about... I don't want to go into that. Joel Smith is facing some very serious charges under the AFL anti-doping code, and it's probably best that I don't comment any further on that, because those charges will be heard at the AFL anti-doping tribunal when that's convened.
You can see them.
Look, the AFL playing cohort of over 1,300 players are elite athletes and perform admirably in all, you know, in all facets of life, but we don't shy away from the societal issue that is illicit drug use, and that's why we have an illicit drugs policy in place. That's why we have the best doctors in place looking after our players and caring for our players. Our players get looked after so much better than anyone else in, you know, normal life, and so I would say that they're, you know, it's a safe place for our players to be, and that's it.
Andrew, are you required to answer Parliament given the allegations were taken there?
I understand that they were raised under parliamentary privilege, and there's no requirement for that.
Do you concede that the AFL players have a drug use problem that's widespread?
No, not at all. I've said a number of times, it's a societal issue, and that's why we have an illicit drugs policy in place. But it's founded on player health and welfare. We educate and we look to rehabilitate.
Is it time for a zero-tolerance approach?
I think what we need to do is have an illicit drugs policy that's fit for purpose for 2024 and beyond, and the review will play out what that needs to be. I've spoken to Andrew Wilkie once, and that was over something to do with Tasmania. I don't intend necessarily to meet with him on this.
Are you happy with the message that you get caught with drugs, it's okay to lie?
Look, what I'm saying is what we've got is a policy that the players sign up to in addition to the anti-doping code. So the WADA code is what applies to all sports. The AFL and its players have agreed to put in place an additional policy that looks after and has player health and welfare at the forefront. And that's the key to that. And private medical information is private medical information. Look, it's a good question, Sarah. It's part of the review that we're going on now. And, you know, we've been on a journey. We've made enormous bounds in AFLW, going from, you know, our 8 teams to 18, and as the season's expanding and a number of other things. And I think as part of the review, the AFLW players being part of the policy is certainly on the table as part of the review.
A couple more, Tim.
Not that I'm aware of, no. We've got incredible club doctors. We've got incredible doctors who work for us here at the AFL, and they have the care and health and welfare of our players at the heart. It is a really complex job, and it's getting more and more complex, but I think we're in a fortunate position that we have got these doctors who have got such great care for their players. So we're certainly cognizant of it, but we have got we've got doctors who are at the absolute elite end of their field to do a fantastic job for, you know, for the competition, for their clubs and for the players.
Great. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
AFL CEO Andrew Dillon live from AFL House. So your calls, 1-300-736-736 on Dwayne's World. Your calls, as is normal, all the way up to 2 o'clock. Still on the Barclay Smokehouse lunch menu. A little bit later on, Sammy Edmund, our chief reporter, will join us again. Dr. Peter Larkins, I think, is also booked for after 2 o'clock. So hopefully we'll talk to the best doc in the business. Our round 2 AFL rising star, George Wardlaw, is also on the Barclay Smokehouse lunch menu. So we will talk some actual football. But your calls on the biggest story of the day, if not the biggest story of the year. 1-300-736-736, straight after the break on the Werribee Kia open line. The biggest ever EV sale is on now at Werribee Kia.
On-deck business loans for up to $250,000. Apply in just minutes. Go to ondeck.com.au today.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Let's head to your calls, 1-300-736-736, full ball, but we'll get to as many of you as possible, and as is the Midday Madness promise, you call in the first 2 hours you get on. So we'll get to you all, Lee, Joel, Peter, Anthony, Sam, Mark and David, we'll get to you all. Keep your calls coming when someone drops off. Lee on the road, we'll start with you. Welcome, Lee.
Yeah, g'day, mate. How are you?
Good.
Mate, two key points for me personally was it felt like the AFL were more than happy to throw the players under the bus and utilise the term player confidentiality. That's the reason no one got to know about any of this, because it had to be kept private from the players or for the players. So I felt like they're using the players as a scapegoat. And the second aspect of it for me is personally, and I took the stand back in 2011 when I started to learn more about the intricacies of the AFL, the only people that can hold them accountable are the sponsors and the members. And now it's become reality, a lot of the suspicion. Now it's up to the members and, as I say, the sponsors to make their decision. Do they want to be part of the competition that is geared around this, or don't they? So at the end of the day, we're the only ones that can hold them accountable.
Appreciate your call, Lee. Joel, welcome to you and Doreen.
Well, Doreen, how are you going?
Good.
John, a bit similar to the last call. That was a big watershed interview that Doreen has done, and he sweat that we're underneath the rug. If I had heard player confidentiality with Doctor or 24, 25 one more time, I would have thrown up. At the end of the day, these players are being told not to train and not to play based on if there is going to be a random test and they know there's a test coming through. Does that mean that there is also players playing on game days with drugs in their system because they're not being tested? I know it's not a performance-enhancing drug as such underneath the code. It's classified as an illicit drug. But some of these drugs they're using, and I'm not using myself, but I know people that do, and I've seen the consequences, they do affect your performance. Speed and cocaine can give you energy and keep you awake for hours on end. And as a non-Bombers fan, I'll say this, when you have clubs and sportsmen being done for drugs that they couldn't prove were given, and losing brownies and things, and now you're just saying it's okay, we just tell our players not to play this week because of the drug use system. You've got more than a handful of players in the AFL that have been doing this, and this has been happening since, as far as we know, team-wise, since the 2000s. You had West Coast doing it. Melbourne will be inquired this year. Multiple clubs. This is absolute BS. And Andrew Dillon, that was the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
Appreciate your call, Joel. Just on that, the thought that you had that players are being told not to play because they're about to get tested, that's not exactly how it works. So if you self-report, then you have the option, if you self-report under what we've been told by the AFL and what we've been told by Sammy Edmund and this report, if you self-report, then you can get a test, and the test will tell you if you've got a prohibited substance in your system, and the AFL prevents you from playing if you've got a prohibited substance in your system. It's unsafe for you, and it's probably unsafe for the players that you're playing against. So you do have to stand out. They won't let you play with that in your system. It's not that they're not letting you play because they think you're going to get tested, or they hear you're going to get tested. They're just simply not letting you play. Peter in Oakley, welcome to you, Peter.
Hey, how you going?
Good.
Just on the broad range of covering and the testing, there's lots of countries around the world where alcohol's bad, it's banned, illegal, can't obtain it. And here in Australia, there's no testing. They don't do any testing for alcohol. I'm just wondering why there's such an impact on the illicit things like marijuana, which I'd much prefer to train with someone who's stoned than someone who's run around pissed, because there's more chance of them stack an interview. So, yeah, I don't understand why there's so much emphasis on the illicit side, and yet there's nothing out, there's more mental health issues, which seems to be the premise of the whole thing. They're using mental health, or they're worried about the players, you know, with mental health, because they've used an illicit substance. Surely alcohol comes under that banner tenfold more than any illicit substances. So, yeah, I'm just wondering why you seem to be the expert on all these illicit things. Why don't they test for alcohol? Or you may not know, you're training with someone who's blind. Not saying they would be, but I'm just saying there's no other area like that.
I'm certainly not an expert as to what's worse, being stoned or drunk. But I reckon both, if you turned up to training, would be detectable, Peter. And I think that the clubs would not let you train if you're drunk, even though they do test, I think, for everything during the week. And if you do test during the week, it's a voluntary policy. Remember that. The AFL players have signed up to a voluntary policy where whatever you have in your system, if you're tested midweek, you will get counselled on. So maybe there are some players who've turned up with too much alcohol in their system, and they've cancelled them on that as part of this voluntary system where they want you to get help as opposed to want you to be out and out for 6 months. Appreciate your call, Peter. Anthony, Sam, Mark, Greg, Andrew, we'll get to you all. Keep your text coming through on the Footy Wings temper text as well, 0433 98 11 16. It's Midday Madness. You call, you get on. Back to your calls next after news. Straight back to your calls and texts for Midday Matters for Work Locker, Karen Downs and Packing and Workwear for wherever you work. A couple of texts on the way through. One here from Pickles who clarifies alcohol is not an illegal substance, and that is correct. You are allowed to train on alcohol because it's a legal substance. But I think if they did do testing, and they do testing, and you were found to have too much alcohol in your system, they'd still be sending you home even though it's legal. Dwayne, some strange texts come through, so I just want to read a couple of these. Dwayne, I'm so bloody angry, even more so after the drivel I just heard. AFLW girls named and picks in the paper, yet secrecy and privacy for AFL men. Give me a break. Rhonda from Geelong. Yeah, Rhonda, you're slightly misguided in that. If, like the girls, you're found by police to be in possession, you get named. I could list a whole heap of men who've been found in possession or have been caught in possession that have been AFL players. Brad Crouch is just one of them. Found in possession, gets named. A lot of players in the men's game have been named as well. That's the process if you get found in possession by police, as is the case with the two women in Sydney. It's not a men get secrecy and the women don't situation. But I appreciate your text. Let's just put that on the table, though. And one here. Well, surely the AFL can have a media room inside the AFL house where there's not trams and road noise. Yeah, I get that as well. There's been a lot of those texts coming through, so I appreciate how many texts have come through on that. I won't read them all, though. Thanks to all of you who have texted. We'll read a heap more very shortly. Anthony in Sydney, welcome to you, Anthony.
Yeah, how you going? I'm baffled. The amount of times they use private medical information in that press conference. No, I just want to highlight a few things. So if a player gets an injury and doesn't want it declared to the public or the media, can they hide under the same veil of private medical information? Where was all this, obviously with, you know, let's just say a positive COVID test a couple of years ago, It was openly done that, you know, there was no private medical information that was under a veil of secrecy for things like that. Why are they making these provisions for something such as an illicit substance?
Because a player probably
hiding under the same veil.
They can. If they don't want their injury listed, Anthony, if they don't want what's the reason they're out listed, I mean, they might have a heart condition. They might have various things they don't want out there. Players probably think, well, it's a hamstring. Do I really want to keep that a secret? So the amount of lie-telling at least gets reduced to the point that if you've got a hamstring or you've broken your leg, we might as well be honest about it. But if you've got a heart condition or you're out with a medical condition that you would like to be kept private and it's nothing to do with drugs, then you still have that kept private because that is your right under player-doctor confidentiality. And that is part of what is, and let's just reinforce this, it's a voluntary system that the AFL players sign up to. So we can complain about the system, yes, and I'm complaining about the system too. I'm all good with having a system, yes, but what I don't like is the feeling that We're being lied to and treated like fools with injury lies. I don't like that at all. Often in sport and life, the cover-up or the lie is worse than the actual occurrence itself. So to me, any policy that forces players to lie about why they are late withdrawals, I don't like. And it's not just lying to fans and broadcasters. I mean, it's lying to CEOs. It's lying to teammates. It's lying to coaches, because the coaches don't get to find out. It's just the player and the doctor who knows. The CEO doesn't find out. So it's not just us fans or the media rattling the "oh, we'd like to know" cage. Appreciate your call though, Anthony. Sam, Mark, Greg, Andrew, John, quick break. Back to you. You're with Wayne's World.
On Deck Business Loans for up to $250,000. Apply in just minutes. Approval in as quickly as 2 hours. Go to ondeck.com.au today.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Always great to have your company for Midday Matters for Work Locker, Karen Downs and Pakenham. Work where for, wherever you work. Straight back to your call. Sam and Kilo Downs, thanks for holding, Sam.
Go on, yeah, Dwayne. Look, I think the AFL has shown a complete lack of transparency in this whole drugs debate. Andrew Dillon was holding about the fact that they are private medical records. And like that previous caller, injuries are explained to the public. You can't pick and choose. You mentioned...
Well, just on that, Sam, the player can pick and choose. So the player can say, I don't want this issue that I've got divulged. It's between you and I, Doc. So he can pick and choose if he wants to, Sam. That's everyone's right when it comes to medical confidentiality with the doctor.
But, Dwayne, when a player gets injured,
yeah,
the club will report. They don't go to the player. For example, Tom Duday, they don't go, yeah, oh, Tom, can we release that you've got a torn ACL?
Yeah, but it's a bit different, Sam. If he's torn it in full view at training, then it is in full view at training. Now, what might happen in a situation where if he tears his ACL in his own time, at home, he might say to the doctor, look, I've just torn my ACL. I want to tell my family and friends first. I want them to get the understanding of what's going on. I want to get a scan first before we tell anybody. So you do have the opportunity to keep even an ACL injury private, Sam. But if you rip your hamstring or you do what Stephen May or Jake Lever had happen on the field on the weekend, you can't keep that private, obviously, because it's a publicly seen and publicly known injury. But you do have that opportunity if you're talking to your doctor about something privately that only you and him know about straight up.
But in the real world, Dwayne, it doesn't happen that way. The clubs report, they don't go to the player. An ACL, you wouldn't know by watching it, is that an ASL? Or it could be an expected ACL,
yeah, Sam,
injury.
We'll agree to disagree on that. If we see a knee injury on the field, then it's pretty much silly if the AFL then say, if the club says, oh, it was he's taken the top off his fingernail. There are things we can see and things we know that can't be hidden because we've seen it already. So that would be ridiculous. But there are things that are private between a player and doctor. Always have been, always will be. Now, whether you do or don't like this policy where a positive drug test can be private between you and your doctor, that's fine. I don't like it either, and there's questions I've got about the drug policy we've got that surely needs to change. But we can't argue for 25 minutes here on whether players can or can't keep injuries private, because they do have the opportunity to keep some things private if they want to under their right. Greg in Healesville, welcome to you, Greg.
Yeah, thanks, Pipe, mate. I've got a couple of points I want to raise with you, if I may. But firstly, mate, I'd like to... just a massive sing out to my older brother who just, he was awarded at OAM for his troubles, mate, after 35 years of service in the National Defence Force. So, well done, bro. Good on you, Steve.
Give him a, what's your name? What's his name, Greg?
His name's Stephen Patterson, mate.
Good on you, Steve.
He's an officer in the Navy. He's done 35 years and he got an OAM, so I'm super proud of that bloke. Just 2 points, if I may, Pipe. Firstly, where's the dissent rule gone, mate? Because I see blokes waving their arms around and mouthing off at umpires these days, left, right and centre. And I know you're all over it, mate. You probably cover 3 or 4 games a week. So, firstly, where's the dissent rule gone? And secondly...
I think it's actually receded back to a fair dissent rule, Greg, as opposed to the extremist dissent rule we had for 3 months.
Right. Yep. Also, I heard you, I've been listening to you all day, mate, and I heard you just a couple of callers ago regarding drugs and alcohol, and you said drugs were legal in a workplace, they can be sent home. Well, actually, they're not.
No, I didn't say drugs were legal. I didn't say drugs were legal at all, Greg. I said alcohol was legal, but you can still be sent home.
Yeah, but it's not legal in a workplace, mate, because AFL is a workplace. And if you drive for a living, your emergency service, your cops, Amber, you've all got to be zero. So it's a workplace. So booze is a no-no, mate.
Yeah, this doesn't mean that booze is illegal, but it is illegal according to some people who are employers. Absolutely. But if you're self-employed, you can have 3 cans of Jim Beam if you want and sit back and do your article or write your paper, or if you're an artist. I don't think they test artists as to whether they're painting their next mural with any alcohol in their system. It depends on which workplace, of course. But I appreciate your call, Greg. We've got a full board. Andrew, Pete, Ian, Mark, we'll get to you all. 1-300-736-736. Dean in Burwood, I know you've been waiting for an eternity. Midday Matters, you call, you get on. Try to keep your point short. We'll get to you all, as is the promise you with Dwayne's World.
On Deck Business Loans for up to $250,000. Funding possible the same business day. Go to ondeck.com.au today.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Dean in Burwood, thanks for holding. Dean, welcome to you.
Good day, Dwayne. First of all, condolences to Andrew Clifton's family. One of the greatest presidents St Kilda's ever had.
Nice.
He's on the Olympic Committee and he's just a great bloke. But anyway, condolences to his family. The AFL drug rules, I mean, he's sure 10 years ago got 10 weeks for having a $10 multi. I mean, that's a legal thing. And then they've got all these illegal drugs and they get 3 strikes for it. I mean, the AFL, the second language is lying. I mean, they're treating the punters as actually mugs. They lie about everything. I mean, you had Richo on, as you said last year, about the Ruffin Grundy. You've got Barry Pert saying that Melbourne's got the best culture of all time. He's gone to footy club. They're all complete lies. They're never accountable for what they say. I don't know how to get away with it.
Appreciate your call. Great to have you call. Pete and Paran, you want to talk about this? Welcome to you, Pete. Thanks for holding. Have we got you there, Pete?
Dwayne, sorry. I'm sorry,
it's
Dwayne.
Right.
I just moved out. Yeah, so... Firstly, I'm not against what the AFL is doing. I state that with the qualification regarding if it's designed to do the greatest good, then I don't have a problem with it. If the intent is for the betterment of those young people who are falling into a situation regardless of what the reason is, then I'm all for it. What, however, is unappealing is the way they conducted the issue with Essendon, the way they've hung out to dry people who have gambled before for $10 and $20 type bets, which is totally inconsistent with protecting the welfare of the individual, the mental welfare of the individual. And that I have a problem with. And the only part with it being voluntary, Dwayne, that's an issue is if I had an issue and I wanted to mask it, well, I'd want it to be voluntary whether I report or not, because I'd want to know if I'm going to get caught out on a weekend as well. So it kind of, that's a two-edged sword. But honestly, if it's all about betterment and it's helped some of our kids that play the game, then I have no issue with it.
Appreciate your call, Pete. Yeah, so the AFL, Andrew Dillon, earlier on today said that it has made a difference to players' lives, not just one or two players, he said. So the voluntary policy that they've got to help players, which is signed up to by the players, they okayed it, where you do have strikes and you do have the opportunity to self-report. Andrew Dillon's own words were that it has made a difference to players' lives, and he said not just one or two players. So, yeah, we don't know what the number is. He won't know who those players are, by the way. He won't know their names. I think they do get the raw number of players that have self-reported, but they don't. I know they don't get the names of the players themselves. Brendan in Glen Huntly, you'd have to be quick. The news is looming. Welcome to you, Brendan.
Yeah, hey, Dwayne, how you going, mate?
Good.
I just, with this players that do this midweek test, if they're no good, they sit out, or they put it as an injury or omitted or whatever. Do you personally think this is a good thing for the whole league and clubs in general going forward when you see such and such a player that was all right the week before and omitted, and it's just going to make everyone wonder, did they have a night out or did they test positive and are they out because of that or because they've actually been a positive test and not what we're actually being told?
Yeah, Brendan, I'm with you. I don't like it. I said that earlier, so you obviously weren't with us earlier, but I don't like it. I'm all good with having a policy. That's fine, but this feeling of being lied to and treated like a fool with an injury lie, I'm not a fan of. So to me, any policy that forces players to lie about why they're late withdrawals, and even though the players are signed up to it, I don't think it's good for the players now overall. I mean, there's 800-odd players, and now all of a sudden, all of them are getting questioned if they withdraw late from a game, and they surely don't want that. Back to your calls and texts after the break. You're with Dwayne's World.
On Deck Business Loans for up to $250,000. Funding possible the same business day. Go to ondeck.com.au today.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Always great to have your company for Midday Madness. Dwayne's World for On Deck Business Loans up to $250,000. And Midday Madness continues another big hour of your calls. 1-300-736-736. And in many ways, this is why we designed Midday Madness and Dwayne's World, to have your calls for 2 hours, because there are issues every day that people want to talk about, and getting your thoughts on them is what we want to do on this program. So 1-300-736-736 if you would like to make your point, and we'll get you to air a little bit later on the Barclays Smokehouse lunch menu. You can ask for grandmother ham at your local deli. SEN Chief Reporter Sammy Edmund will join us. And round two AFL rising star George Wardlaw later in the program, and Dr. Peter Larkins. You can beat the lunch lockout with grandmother ham from Barclays Smokehouse. Find it at your local deli. A couple of texts that have come through. Dwayne, now we are all going to be suspicious of all players who are late withdrawals. Glenn from Christie Downs. Well, I think we've always been, for years, been suspicious of late withdrawals. In fact, let me play a little bit of Nathan Buckley from February. Nathan Buckley, you know, being suspicious. I mean, everybody is now going to be more suspicious, but I think we've been suspicious for a while. Here's Bucks and a story from Feb on SEN.
I had a doctor come to me once early in my coaching career and say that a couple of players had done their hamstrings during the session and wouldn't be available for 4 weeks, standard. But they'd trained and got through the session. So I do wonder whether, and I was a little naive at the time, but looking...
Did you challenge him on that?
No, not at the time. I just thought, oh, well, this the hits keep coming. We were going through a challenging period. And I thought, I've got no, this is a hunch. It's no, I haven't got anything to back it up. But I wonder in retrospect whether there was a strike there that I wasn't aware of, because it did feel, you know, it did feel strange at the time.
So there it is, Bucks and Feb. So it's not just suspicion now in the wake of this story. There's retrospective suspicion still, and we've been suspicious for a while. So this is in some ways not new. One here, callers being mad at the AFL have to remember the drug policy has been implemented in conjunction with the AFL Players Association, so both parties are responsible. It's another from Greg. Hi, Dwayne, I agree with you, respect the AFL policy, but I don't agree with the dishonesty when it happens, poor culture, especially at the top. Tom from Footscray. Yeah, but what else do we do? And there's a text here that kind of says it as well, because, you know, what's the other alternative, Dwayne? We say we want transparency, but would we really have been okay if a player was withdrawn from a game because of a positive voluntary recreational test being the reason? I can understand the AFL and clubs wanting to protect the player, Beale in Hobart. Yeah, so do we want that known in the future, that it's a positive voluntary test? And another here, this is a non-story. This private nature of this has been going on for years. Typical politician blow-up. Bring on the footy on Thursday night. Matt from Perth. Thanks to all of you who've sent through texts. There's been hundreds of them. Well, one here, how do we know it's not all 800 players doing drugs? That's from Jared in Geelong. Well, we know it's not all 800 players because there hasn't been 800 players withdraw pre-game. But I get what you're saying. We don't know the actual number, but at least we got a rough idea given how many players have been withdrawn pre-game. It's a pretty minuscule number, and what percentage of those players have been withdrawn for this reason. Michael in Canberra, as we head back to your calls for Midday Madness. Welcome to you, Michael.
G'day, Dwayne, how are you?
Good.
mate, I just wanted to give it a bit of context. There's been a lot of people ringing in today making comments about these privileged players and they get paid a heap of money and it should be the one strike thing. I think we need to remember that, look, those callers, and they're ringing up, if they've done nothing wrong in their life, good on them. But we're talking about kids who have been in the system since they were 15. They worked really hard to get drafted. They are, at the end of the day, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds. And they're trying to grow up inside an AFL system. So I think at some point we have to go, you know what, people do make mistakes. And if no one knows about it and they can carry on with their career, well, I think that's okay.
Appreciate your call on that. Look, we get some crazy texts come through as well. There's some texts that I just refuse to read. I mean, we read that text out of from a lady earlier today saying it's one thing for the women, it's one thing for the men. Of course, it's not. We have had men named because they've been caught with illegal substances by the police as well. So let's just dispel one here. Dwayne, highly suspicious now of Stephen May and Jake Lever if they don't play this week. Clinton, of course we're not. Of course we're not because they had injuries last week we saw. So let's, I mean, why do we need to go to the crazy end of the ridiculous spectrum when something like this happens? That's the bizarre thing that always amazes me. Dean in Reservoir. Dino, welcome to you.
G'day, Dwayne. I just wanted to hark back about early 2000s when Dale Lewis came out and told the public that there was a drugs problem occurring in the AFL, and he quickly got shut down by then CEO Andrew Demetrio, and he got to retract his comments. And if I can remember correctly, Jason Ackermanis accused another team of the same thing. Now, look, if it was out in the open back then, he could have changed. He could have brought it into check a bit more. Maybe probably wouldn't have got rid of it or where we are now, but it probably would have been managed a bit better if it got out pretty early, if he wasn't shut down. I wouldn't mind hearing Dale Lewis speak now and an apology coming his way, maybe.
Yeah, he did alert us. Dino, you're absolutely spot on. He did alert us. Appreciate your call. By the way, you've got a grandmother ham coming your way thanks to Barclays Smokehouse. Hold the line. We'll let you know how we can get that to you. Make sure you ask for Barclays Smokehouse Grandmother Ham at your local deli. Mark on the Limestone Coast. Welcome to you, Mark. Thanks for holding.
Yeah, cheers, mate. I think, like our Indigenous brothers and sisters sometimes have, we need to have a truth-telling session about all of this. I've got several points. Firstly, I'll admit, back in the 80s, I dabbled in a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but then I hit my 30s and grew up, you know? So there's that. Second point is your mate, your Melbourne supporter who phones up quite regularly. I can't think of his name. Is it Chris?
Yeah, from Camberwell, yes.
Yeah, he was spot on. So a big shout out to Chris. He's been spot on with this the whole way through. Second last point, I absolutely agree with you. If the AFL are found complicit with Melbourne in faking injuries, then that's a totally different ball game. All you have to do is say personal reasons. You don't have to fake a hamstring. You just say pulling out for people. It might be a problem in the family. It might be a sick child. So you just say I'm pulling out for personal reasons, because saying a hamstring affects bad betting agencies. It can affect future trading. If you've faked a hamstring a couple of times, you mightn't get picked up by another club. And my last point is the last time I checked, cocaine is a criminal import. Cartels, murderers, organised crime. It's not like, remember that ad, oils ain't oils, Sol? Drugs ain't drugs. There's all different types. And everyone's just saying drugs. Well, cocaine is a really serious thing. It's not like a little bit of happy tobacco grown by your old hippie auntie down on the Bellarine Peninsula. So people need to remember that. I think cannabis now is totally legal in the ACT. It's decriminalised here in South Australia. So saying drugs, just getting the tar brush out, I don't think helps anyone.
Appreciate your call, Mark. Andrew Nidri, welcome to you, Andrew.
Oh, Dwayne, look, it all goes back to trust. The AFL and its leadership has broken the trust of all its supporters. And it's very, you know, how can we trust when someone says they're going to be withdrawn because of illness on the day, or have hamstring tightness or bad back and they're out for weeks? How does the punter, how does you and I sit there and look at it from now on? How do we? How can we?
Well, but I don't think it's but that's not new to me, Andrew. I don't know why that's new. It shouldn't be new. We've been questioning that for years, haven't we?
Yes.
The late withdrawal.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah.
But I get concerned when I get told a young player who's been drafted is already on cocaine. That's been told to me by a good source. Now, I'm not going to say which club, what player.
Yeah, let's not do that.
I mean,
we get told a lot of things by people down the road that don't end up being true, which is one of the reasons that we're not throwing a name out now. So we all get told stuff. I mean, I'll get told stuff too, but a lot of the stuff I get told doesn't end up being true. So you take some things with a grain of salt. It depends on who tells you, I suppose, and you've got to trust your source. Andrew, I appreciate your call. So just to answer your question, what we can do now going forward is that the AFL is reviewing this policy. We heard Andrew Dillon say about half an hour ago when we played you his press conference, the AFL is reviewing this policy because it does have flaws. And the AFL players have signed up to this policy and agreed to this policy. But if more of them are starting to get tarred with the brush to the point that they can't withdraw the morning of the game due to family reasons and be believed, then they might be the ones that actually change it. The players themselves might say, hang on, no, enough of this. I withdrew due to family reasons last week because my mother was ill. And now all of a sudden people are asking, was your mother really ill? So I reckon the players themselves, when they review this policy with the AFL, will say to themselves, hang on, we need to come up with something better here because we don't want to all be tarred with that brush. And let's hope the AFL reviews this policy really, really quickly. 1-300-736-736 is the open line if you'd like to join us. Still got a heap to give away, including some vouchers to head down to Pink Lemonade on us for a round of Grey Goose vodka to share with some friends. Play starts and finishes at Pink Lemonade, Swan Street, Richmond, sponsored by Grey Goose Vodka. We've got that to give away if you're heading down to the MCG. Drop down to Pink Lemonade in Swan Street, Richmond, and enjoy it. It's a fantastic place to enjoy a pre-game or a post-game bit of frivolity. Back to your calls. Dwayne's World for on-deck business loans up to $250,000. And that open line, 1-300-736-736, brought to us by Werribee Kia. The biggest EV sale is on now at Werribee Kia. And you can drop down and see David, Janan, Aid, Jim, the whole team at Werribee Kia. They'd love to see you.
On-deck business loans for up to $250,000. Apply in just minutes. Go to ondeck.com.au today.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Ted and Ocean Grove, as we get back to your calls, you want to talk Harry Sheezer? Welcome to you, Ted.
Yeah, thanks, Dwayne. I suppose amongst all this doom and gloom, and I know we love to whack the AFL, but I just want to talk about something really positive. I'm amazed at how well these young kids speak to the media. I was listening to Harry Sheezel on the program the other day, and he was so articulate and honest and well-spoken, and I just think clubs do a wonderful job preparing these kids, and they can't have had that much media training. I mean, Harry's only been in the system a year or two, but they just speak really well. I think back to when I was 18, I couldn't string two words together. So I think they do an excellent job, and always love listening to the likes of Nick Larkey and Marcus Windhager and a lot of players that you don't always hear a lot from.
Now, great call, Ted, and hold along. I've got something for you. I hope Harry doesn't mind me saying this out of school, but I've had Harry on the show quite a few times, Harry Sheezel. He is an extraordinary human being, Harry Sheezel. Not all the kids that come through are as astute, level-headed, and as in control of their environment and their own emotions as Harry Sheezel. And I was at a function with Harry last week. There was probably 30 people there, and I said in front of those 30 people, Harry, you are an extraordinary human being. You are just a delight to have as part of our game. And I hope he wasn't embarrassed, but I did want those people in the function to know that he is extraordinary. And I hope to have him on this show as a regular, Ted, but there are a number of extraordinary players coming through right now. Maybe the system's better, I'm not sure, but they are brilliant kids, the majority of them, Ted. So I love your call. Hold the line. You've won thanks to Pink Lemonade. You've got a round of Grey Goose vodka to share with some friends down at Pink Lemonade, Swan Street, Richmond, sponsored by Grey Goose. You can drop down before or after a game at the MCG. Leon in Geelong. Welcome to you, Leon.
Yeah, Dwayne, thanks for the call. I was a
president for a number of years down in the Ballarine area, and we knew we had a problem, drug problem in the club, and I was lucky enough being able to get a policeman to come in with a sniffer dog one night of training while the boys were out on the track, and he located the dog located three bags. We sorted it all out, and pretty quick, because those senior players are dealing with the 18s and the 16s and all that as well. Went to a president's meeting, told them what I did, and got a phone call from the AFL this next couple of days to say I couldn't do it because it was against the players' privacy and rights. Like, mate, I just can't believe that the players aren't held accountable. They're role models, these players, and all they're doing is laughing at everybody. It's just not on, mate. It's, local clubs are trying their hardest to, and they're all volunteers, and we don't get the support at ground level. It's just not on. Shocking.
Appreciate your call, Leon. I think there's a few more stories. I've got a full board right now. I think there might be one or two stories of similar local footy instances as well. So I appreciate you giving us yours. Pete in Airport West, welcome to you, Pete. Great to have you on.
Hey, g'day, Dwayne. Dwayne, I just want to pick up something Andrew Dillon said. Look, he was his wit's end to say it was between the doctor and the player and it was confidential. And then he goes, oh, look, it's only a small amount of players. How does he know it's only a small amount of players?
I think he gets told the raw number, Peter. My understanding is the AFL does, if they want to find out, know the raw number of players who self-report.
Yeah, but it's up to the player to self-report, isn't it?
Yeah, with the doctor. But I think the doctor in the end, and the doctors do end up giving a number to the AFL, and the AFL is also, I think, gives the clubs an indicator as to where they are on the, I shouldn't call it a ladder, but on the drug-taking ladder, if you know what I mean. And we heard that quoted by the Melbourne Footy Club about a month ago as to, oh, we're not one of the clubs that have got an extreme problem. We're in the middle somewhere. And I think you do get told as a club where you are somewhere. So I think the raw number, just the number, does get reported to the AFL. That's how Andrew Dillon would know. Steve in Melton, welcome to you, Steve.
Yeah, hi, Dwayne. I just wanted to sort of half educate your listeners on the how common it is in society for those under 30. We've got a photo booth business, so I'm at events all the time. Every weekend we're at events. When we do a under 30 party, so a 21st or an 18th, a formal anything, you could see the amount of people that are doing cocaine, and it ranges from Reservoir to Cranbourne, and it does discriminate in how wealthy you are and how rich and how poor you are. It is everywhere, and the players are starting at sort of 15, 16, especially these days. A lot of these players are going to elite schools because they're the pathways that they're following. They get contacts there. They start using it, and then that's why they're using it so often in the AFL, especially now. You 20 years ago, it wouldn't have been anywhere near as bad. It wouldn't have been cocaine. It would have been something like speed or something. And the AFL, the reason why they need to crack down on it is because there are links to organised crime.
Appreciate your call, Steve. Look, there's so many callers coming through. The Midday Madness promises you call, you get on. We'll get you all on before 2 o'clock. I'm also told that George Wardlaw is going to join us after the break, so I better get to George as well. Ross on the move. We're going to hear Ross.
Oh, hi, Dwayne. I was just wondering if you could tell me, how do you think Joe Watson would be feeling this morning?
Yeah, I don't know about that line, that analogy line through Joe Watson and what the stories that's happened has. So I'll steer clear of that. I think it's a really tenuous line to draw, I think. Tom in Berwick, you there, Tom?
Yeah, g'day, Dwayne. I want to chase back here a little bit. I heard this morning on Jared's program that there will be a women's test match, an actual test match at the MCG, a day and night test match. I think that's absolutely fantastic. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's great, Tom, and I think we're expecting the full run of games to be delivered to us shortly, a full map of what the summer's looking like. But absolutely, I've said a number of times on this program, we should support women's sport more than we do. I've got a platform where if I don't support women's sport more than I ever have before, then I'm probably not doing my job, to be honest. So, Tom, I appreciate your call. Let's try and get more women on to talk about their sport and give them the platform that they deserve. And it's good that the governing body has given them the platform they deserve, which is the MCG. Great call. Greg in Strathbogie, you there, Greg?
Yeah, thank you very much for the balanced nature of your program. I think we concentrate a lot on the negatives. I'm not trying to minimise it. But generally, it's the only sport I know where you're in a team of 24 people. It's hard to hide if you play there for a long time. And the vast majority of people you see coming out of the AFL system are fantastic young people, boys and girls.
Great to have your call, Greg. I really appreciate you jumping on and giving it some balance as well, because I think we are getting more fantastic role model citizens coming through at a younger age than ever before. And we can all cast our minds back to what we were like when we were 18 or 19. That's easy to do. Speaking of which, young gun George Wardlaw is going to join us straight out of... Well, we'll take a few more calls after the break. George is not far away, about 10 minutes away. And I wouldn't mind throwing up the great debate, thanks to Titanium Caravans, built tough to tackle Australia's harshest conditions, make your next caravan a titanium. Titanium Caravans, Australian-made luxury off-road caravans. So the titanium great debate today is, what should North Melbourne do going forward with their home game on Good Friday? What should they do? North Melbourne, I think it's a good idea to have it at Marvel Stadium, and I'll explain why I think they should keep it at Marvel and keep their home ground advantage going forward. But if they're going to be able to get 75,000 at the MCG, 80,000 at the MCG against Carlton, there's going to be a continued push to move it there. I'll give you my thoughts straight after the break. Your thoughts. Should it be moved in future and played in front of 75,000 to 80,000 at the MCG, or keep it at Marvel, keep it a lockout, and keep it a North Melbourne home game? Your thoughts on that for Titanium Caravans after the break, and George Wardlaw from North to join us. Your calls, 1300 736 736, on the great debate for Titanium Caravans. So my thought is, what do you think? 1300 736 736, firstly, is North Melbourne, which first and foremost, in my mind, is in the business of winning football games this year, I think they're better off with playing its Good Friday game in front of a full house at home at Marvel against Carlton, rather than away in front of a bigger crowd at Carlton's second home ground at the MCG, because I think staying at Marvel is best. But your thoughts on it, 1300 736 736. I think staying at Marvel is best for North until North are in line to be a finalist, to be able to make the grand final, and then it's going to be an advantage for them to have some games at the MCG. But until that time, if I'm North, I'm keeping my games at Marvel Stadium. Keep your home ground advantage. And I know Carlton also play games at Marvel, but Carlton is more at home at the MCG than North. North also need to develop some ticket security, I think. Ticket scarcity, I should say. Because some fans might miss out this Friday, but there's a heap of other games that North play in Melbourne where entry is easy to get. So if you're a North fan, I think some ticket scarcity is a good thing. It's good to have a business. It's a good business decision to have a lineup out front of your nightclub every now and then. And North finally getting a lineup out front of their nightclub. And I think if it gets moved to the MCG, remember, it's unlikely to be a full MCG if it gets moved. So you'll get 50,000 at Marvel and maybe 70,000 at the MCG. So North aren't locking out 50,000 here. It's not like they're going to get 100,000. So you're only locking out 20,000 on fans. And the extra fans will be Carlton fans that you let in at the MCG. So you'll have a 90% crowd of Carlton fans at the MCG if you end up playing in front of 70 to 75,000 there. So to me, I think Marvel is the place to stay if you're North Melbourne until you're a contender to actually be playing in a grand final, and then MCG games are going to be of value to you. Your thoughts on that? 1300 736 736. Raylene in Thornbury, what can you, Raylene?
Thanks. I reckon that teams should play on the home ground, just like Geelong should, so should North Melbourne.
So you like the, yeah. You're a North Melbourne fan, Raylene. You think it's a good idea to play at Marvel, given that Carlton's got more of an advantage at the MCG, which is a second home of theirs?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that North Melbourne should be thinking about themselves only, and don't worry about Carlton. You know, they will get more fans there. It's the same with Geelong. We've got 40,000 now that we could have at home. We've played their one game. We won't be back until round five. We don't need the MCG anymore. Just come down to Geelong and play.
Love your call, Raylene. Hold the line. We've got a Dwayne to a T-shirt coming your way. Got a few of those to give away. Keep them coming. Your calls, 1-300-736-736 on the Great Debate. We'll ask George Wardlaw also, who's joining us in about 15 minutes' time, the rising star for the round. Keep your texts coming as well. Dwayne, North aren't going to make the Good Friday game at the MCG. They would be giving Carlton a massive advantage. Could you imagine if there were 65,000 Carlton fans at a North home game? But they would raise a lot more money for charity. That's from Nat. Yes. So if it's about filling the MCG and raising money for charity, then if I'm Carlton, I'd be happy if North Melbourne decide to flick us and take St Kilda to the MCG. Take the Saints there. So you've got two Marvel co-tenants who've got no advantage of playing at the MCG because they aren't a co-MCG tenant like Carlton is. Change your tactic and take the Saints there in the future, North. But I wouldn't be taking an MCG tenant to the MCG for my home game. And if you take a Fremantle or Port Adelaide there, you're not going to get more than 50,000 anyway, so you're better off keeping it at Marvel. So to me, it has to be a Marvel Stadium co-tenant you're taking there. So Carlton, I think if you want to keep the game as one of your games, I think you're going to have to be content to have it at Marvel, the way I see it. George Wardlaw and your calls straight after the break. You're with Dwayne's World.
On Deck Business Loans for up to $250,000. Apply in just minutes. Approval in as quickly as 2 hours. Go to ondeck.com.au today.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Matt, in Pakenham, where should North Melbourne take their home game next season against Carlton on Good Friday? Should they continue playing it at Marvel in a sellout, or should they play it in front of 75,000 at the MCG and make it a semi-Carlton home game?
I think they've got to play at the G. I think they've got to play in front of as many fans as they can, because these kids, if they want to play finals one day, this is the kind of atmosphere they need. Like, even if it's 60,000 Carlton fans, that's good. They'll learn more from that than, you know, playing in front of 20,000 North fans. So I think it's going to help them in the long run, and it's going to raise more money. So
yeah, so what's the bottom line here? Are we looking to raise more money for Good Friday appeal, or... Because I think the atmosphere at a 50,000 stadium at Marvel is still going to be pretty damn good if you want them to play in front of a good atmosphere. 50,000 at Marvel is still going to be pretty good compared to 75,000 at the G.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, look, more bums on seats on Good Friday is probably... I mean, I think I'd be leaning towards that than...
Mm.
You know, if you can get another 20,000 in, I think that would be great. If they want to keep the Good Friday game... I think they've got to maximise the crowd.
Well, if they want to maximise the crowd, they could give them Collingwood and put it in front of 100,000 at the MCG then, and all of a sudden it becomes a Collingwood home game. So that's the hard part. What does North Melbourne do? That's why I'm asking the question as part of the Great Debate for Titanium Caravans. A couple of texts that have come through on this. Why did St Kilda play a home game against Collingwood at the MCG last week? See, to me, St Kilda's in a different realm right now. They're looking to win a flag. They played finals last year. They're looking to get experience at the MCG and win a flag this year. So when it comes to September, they've played at the MCG before. North Melbourne's just in the business of going from 3 games won to 9 games won, if they can. I'd be looking to play at Marvel and get as many a home ground advantage in front of a fan games in as possible. And we can look at playing at the MCG in the future when we're a chance to win a grand final. But for now, let's just get from 3 wins to 8 wins. That's the difference between St Kilda and North for me right now. Keep the game at Marvel. This new crop at North are fledging superheroes, so I like that as well, given the Marvel crossover. I agree with that. Alex in Darwin's called about the drug policy. Alex, welcome to you.
Hey, mate. It's very simple. The one, don't bloody take drugs. Don't take drugs.
Simple. Alex, you've probably hit the nail on the head there. It is pretty simple. Just don't take drugs. We should probably send you Dwayne's your T-shirt up there. You've given us one line that probably sums it all up. Another one here. I think you said earlier, what was the alternative for the AFL and for the players? Label and hang the drug user. Why? Or let them lie about a hamstring use. That's the issue we're facing right now. Which one would you rather? Jono from the Boo. Hey, Pipes. I reckon the scribble I see that is called art. There's no doubt the artist was drunk. Thanks for you down in the Boo. Not sure what art you've been looking at down in the Boo, but yes, there are some employment jobs where you can paint, you can do your job with a couple of Jim Beams or a can of beer or something else in your system. If you're self-employed or you're in that fraternity, music or art, then you probably can do some stuff with stuff in your system. And we're all listening to their music, by the way, the people that have done stuff with stuff in their system to write a great song and end up being a worldwide hit. Dave in Melton, you there, Dave?
G'day, Dwayne. How are you, mate? Just on good. This Good Friday game, right? Is it about building up North Melbourne or building up the money raised for the kids? Like, if you want,
well,
it's
I would
about
think,
the kids. It's about the kids and the money, not North Melbourne.
Okay.
Everyone's got to stop thinking about that.
All right, Dave. Well, I just wanted to clarify what you're thinking, Dave. So you think it's more about the kids than it's about North Melbourne and having a home game to try and win a game of footy?
Of course it is. It's a Good Friday appeal. It's about raising money for the kids in the hospital. That's why the game's there for. And it should be played against the two biggest clubs to bring in the most money. Simple as that. It's got nothing to do with North Melbourne.
Yeah, Dave, I think I disagree with you a bit. Yeah, as much as I want to raise money on Good Friday and I want Good Friday to be a spectacle, I think still a North Melbourne home game. It's still about winning a home game if you're North. One here on the text, Dwayne. It's all about being in North Melbourne, a home game. That's the advantage for North Melbourne. Why would we give that up and make it someone else's home game? After all, we did all the work to get Good Friday going in the first place. It's just not worthwhile. George Wardlaw has been good enough to join me, and we use a bit of a play on for George these days. Here's a bit of music to make George feel at home. That's Dance of the Nights from Romeo and Juliet. That's the choice of song that George Wardlaw has when he kicks a goal these days. George, welcome to the program. Great to have you on.
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, good to be here.
I've got to ask why the choice of that song. I know that a few have asked you, but just for my audience, why is that the choice of song for you?
I wish I could give you a straight answer on that one, but I really can't. I don't know. I must have heard it a while back and when I did, it definitely stuck with me, and it's quite a unique choice and it stands out. But, yeah, I didn't really think it would get this much attention.
No, well, it has got a bit of attention because it is different. Are you a classical music fan, or this is just one out of the box that you heard?
Like I said before, I'm not. It's not in the daily mix, that's for sure.
Right.
But I did like it. I liked the way it sounds, and I thought it'd fit, and it sounds good across Marvel.
Well, you've got a few unique things coming your way. Are you going to stick with the Black Boots forever?
I haven't thought too far ahead about that. I think it might be interesting if I put on some fluoro boots. But yeah, for now, I've got to stick with the Black Boots.
You've got some sponsor surely coming your way. Just leave them blank. It's a bit like a cricketer putting no stickers on his bat. George, they're going to come for you. They're going to have you in a pretty pair of coloured boots soon.
Well, we'll see. Hopefully one day.
It must be fun at the moment. I mentioned earlier on, I was with Harry Cheesel a week ago and talking about how many young guys are coming through. It must be fun at the moment, given you are part of a new crop. It's your second year, so watching AFL 360 last night, you didn't want to say it, but you made it sound as if it's a hell of a lot nicer to be a second-year player than how tough it was this time last year as a first-year player.
That's right. I think I can also, me and Harry can provide a bit of guidance for the high picks in Colby and Zane, who are coming through with a lot of things that happen in your first year. And obviously they'll have a lot of people having expectations on them, but they've handled it really well. Coming around the second time is a lot easier. Can develop more of a leadership role, I suppose, now that it is my second time.
So what have you told Zane and Colby that you learned last year?
A lot about just focusing on the football, which they've found easily because they've come through and had an uninterrupted pre-season, which they've performed really well. So they've found it easy, and obviously both making their debut in round one. It's looking good for them, and they'll no doubt have great seasons.
I had Nick Larkey on the show a couple of days ago, George, and asked him how Alistair Clarkson chose who he took over to the US to go and watch the Golden State Warriors. What was the process there?
Wasn't much of a process. We just saw that our dates lined up with Clarko's Buckley. So he was lucky. Oh, he was nice enough to take me, Blake and Cheese under his arm for a little bit. Took us to a Golden State Warriors game and a few other things, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, we're the chosen ones.
few life lessons as well from Clarko. You stayed in some different places. You were in each other's company a lot.
Yeah, that's right. It was great to bond with the coach during the pre-season. So, yeah, learned a lot off Clarko. Continue to learn a lot off Clarko. Yeah, and more about just finding out a bit more about his personality and the way he goes about things. And, yeah, learned a lot from him.
I heard that Clarko learned a lot from you and Harry as well.
Geez, I'm not too sure about that. Probably.
Well, what kids in 2024 are like? I mean, Clarko's been around a long time. His system at Hawthorn was epic to the point that it won four flags and was cutting edge at the time. But he's had to change a bit, and he needs to get an understanding of what life's like for a 19-year-old in 2024.
Yeah, that's right. He also has a son that's our age too. So he brought his son Matt across, who me and Cheese and Blake all knew growing up. So Clarko might have a bit of understanding of a 19-year-old's life in 2024 with his son being our age. But, yeah, that made the trip all the more enjoyable.
Can you explain a bit of North ball for us? The lining up of players down the spine of the ground, where you have to fan to open up space. Can you give us a little bit of an insider knowledge as to the way North ball gets played when you're moving from defence to attack?
Yeah, well, I think we just play what we get given. We like to put speed on the ball, and we saw that works for us against the Freo Dockers, especially in that first half. So if we can keep playing like that throughout the full course of a game, then good things will happen.
And corridor use if you can. So opening up space in the corridor to keep your corridor availability is what a number of clubs are trying to do these days. You don't really want to go wide.
Yeah, well, you're right. A lot of clubs do try to do that. It's the shortest way to go. So, and if we can get that working, it's probably the most effective too. So, we're not the only club trying to do that. But, yeah, you're up.
Good Friday. If you want to join the debate, would you like it staying at Marvel so you can play in front of a full house of majority of your fans? Or do you think it'd be better at the MCG in front of 80,000, even though it would turn into a Carlton home game?
I'm not too sure on that one. I do like Marvel Stadium. I've gotten used to it now in my second season, so I wouldn't have much input on that. But, yeah, I think it's great at Marvel Stadium. North fans love this game. I remember last year I wasn't out in the field, but I was in the stadium, so I got to experience the from the fans' position, and it was awesome. There were so many people there, and, yeah, I'm really excited to play in front of the big North Melbourne crowd.
Yeah, it does feel like you've got a blockbuster that's yours. It must be exciting for Friday.
That's right. It's a big game for the club. Obviously, it's more than just the game, what it represents for us players and obviously the people in the Royal Children's Hospital. So, yeah, it's a big game and a big day for everybody involved.
And one personal question without notice that you can tell me to nick off if you don't want to tell me the answer. That's fine. You can keep it private. Yep. But what are you driving?
I'm driving a Mazda CX-5.
Okay, so the club have looked after you with a Mazda?
Yeah, they're our great sponsors, so shout out to Mazda.
Okay, you haven't bought one yourself, you haven't gone out. We've been told that the players these days get told by their managers, don't waste your money on your first contract on a new car.
Yeah, not too sure about that. Mazda were generous enough, so I appreciate their their handout, but yeah.
Good pluck. George, great to have you. Good to have you on the program, and we'll talk to you soon. We'll see you Friday.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. Cheers.
George Wardlaw, the Round 2 Rising Star. Of course, we're sponsored here by Werribee Kia, biggest EV sale ever on now at Werribee Kia. You can drop down and see David, Janan, Aid, and Jim and the team. But good to have North Melbourne on the program. Good to have North Melbourne Membership Day a couple of days ago, and good to be able to give some of their long-time sponsors a plug. You with Dwayne's World.
On Deck Business Loans for up to $250,000. Funding possible the same business day. Go to ondeck.com.au today.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Midday Madness rapid fire up to 2 o'clock. Rodney in Brunswick East. Where should North Melbourne be playing their home game on Good Friday?
Yes, just calling in about that guy who said it's all about North. Well, obviously he's not a North supporter, because if he was, he'll notice the amount of work that they put in with the kids. A load of work. And I'll tell you now, they do a very, very good job. And I was in that hospital for most of my childhood with four open heart surgeries. It's a great hospital. And North support, it's 100%. And it's not about North, it's about the kid, mate. So do your research.
Thanks for your call. Ange in Two Worlds, where should they play it, MCG or Marvel? Our previous caller didn't go either way.
Nah, mate, play Marvel. NRL been playing Good Friday for 25 years. Get over it. Either you want to watch it or you don't, Dwayne. Simple as that, mate.
Thanks for your call. Back with plenty after the news on the Barclays Smokehouse lunch menu. Sammy Edmund, SEN Chief Reporter, and Dr. Peter Lark.
On Deck Business Loans for up to $250,000. Apply in just minutes. Go to ondeck.com.au today.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Always great to have your company for Dwayne's World for On Deck Business Loans up to $250,000. Been a massive day. Let's recap it. Let's get the latest. Sammy Edmund's been good enough to join us. Our SEN Chief Reporter, thanks to rjsanderson.com.au, personal and business tax experts. Sammy, welcome back to you.
Big day, Pipe. You know, joining you, though, a little bit like dessert. You save the best to last. Just a nice, sweet way to end my day. So an absolute pleasure to be on with you.
It's been a big morning. I heard you on breakfast this morning reporting at the latest of the AFL were understanding of exactly what has happened and were denying a lot of what was alleged. It seems like the AFL has really pulled the heat out of this fire pretty well today. If the callers are anything to go by, as much as we all don't want to be lied to and as much as we all were shocked when we read the story, when you think about it, we kind of have known that this might have taken place anyway. So because we kind of knew, it isn't as big a shock. Is that the way you're reading it?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about this all day, to be honest, but I'll do my best to summarise. I mean, like we have said all morning here at SEN, Dwayne, before the AFL statement, before Andrew Dillon got behind the microphone this afternoon, the league aren't hiding away from the fact that they do this, that they do target test players, they do it secretly, and they do cite patient-doctor privilege, and they do admit that, yes, in fact, this is part of their medical model. Now, the one question that I think a lot of us have, Dwayne, it's, I don't want to speak for everyone here, but is this, I guess, the clandestine nature of it, the blatant lying that some people put it out as, and the mistruths and the misleading of the public to frame a positive drug test under the guise of hamstring soreness or hamstring tightness. I think that's what a lot of people struggle to get their head around. So Andrew Dillon, as you're about to hear, explained that as best as he can today. But that secrecy, that patient-doctor privilege is something that Andrew Dillon spoke a lot about today. I know you played it earlier, Dwayne, but just very quickly, here's a little bit of the boss of the AFL earlier on today.
It is absolutely imperative that no doctor or club official should ever allow or encourage a player to take the field knowing they've recently taken an illicit substance that may be harmful to their health and or may be deemed performance enhancing. The monitoring of players is highly confidential. A doctor or healthcare professional generally cannot disclose the nature of the clinical intervention or condition to others unless the player consents.
So that's Dillon reading from the statement, right, Dwayne? But when it came to questions, he had to answer up to the fact, as I alluded to before, that the clubs and the club doctors themselves are faking injuries and covering up drug results. Now, Dillon said private medical information was prioritised above basically anything else and that it was up to the player in any given situation to disclose it or not. And let's be honest, that's always going to be not. So he was asked if he was concerned about clubs not being transparent and he cited private medical information. He was asked if the public were being misled, he cited private medical information. He was asked about other players who were legitimately injured now being the target of drug testing conjecture, and he cited private medical information. So in all, I think he said private medical information about a dozen times, adding that he wasn't going to apologise for keeping players sidelined ahead of potentially testing positive. Now, this is something he said showed that the AFL was in fact prioritising the health, safety and welfare of players, health and safety, because they don't want them out there, you know, at, you know, under their most stressed levels physically when they've got, you know, things like cocaine or speed or whatever it might be in their system, and also the welfare of their players given they could face 2- and 4-year bans. Look, we know the illicit drugs policy is under review, Dwayne. It's something that's been in place since 2005. But just before I get your feedback, this is Andrew Dillon on whether he thinks that policy that's been in place now for 19 years is still fit for purpose right now.
I think what we need to do is make sure that we have a policy that is fit for purpose for 2024 and 25 and beyond. I think that's more important. I think that we've got a policy that's been in place for 19 years. I think it's worked really well and it continues to work well. And as I said, it's about rehabilitation and intervention. And it has made, over the 19 years it's been in place, it's made a difference to a number of players' lives. And I've said it before, if it was only one or two players, it would be worth it. But I know that it's been more than that. So it has worked. It continues to work. But it could be better. And that's why we're reviewing it.
So this is where we sit, Dwayne. So it's a policy that, let's be honest, it has never won public approval, has never won public confidence, but the league and the players have always stood firm. They've been unrepentant, really, and they cite a voluntary code with welfare and education as its cornerstones. That will continue to be the case going forward. I'm not sure if they took all the heat out of it or not. I guess their motivations are pure. Some people won't like it. Some people will never like it. And the secrecy certainly was, borderline alarming, I think, overnight in the federal in federal parliament. But you've heard the explanations from the league. Mm.
So what's the fix then? Because the players themselves, who voted to have this voluntary policy where they could do this, would have been reasonably happy that they had a good policy. But now they're all being tarred with the brush of a late withdrawal being suspicious. Do you think the players themselves will say we do need a better system than having to lie?
Well, just on that, so Andrew Dillon was asked about that, and again, won't shock you, he cited private medical information. And he publicly today, and the AFL privately to me this morning, state we are talking, and look, one's too many, but they're saying we're talking a handful of players here. We're not talking 300 of the 1,300 or anything like that. So we're talking a small amount of players. He said private medical information, the privacy required here, overrides everything else. So look, to answer your question, possibly. What the fix is, I'm not sure, but we know we are going to get a new illicit drugs policy going forward. I'm just not sure what the workaround is, Dwayne, because it's fanciful to suggest that you're going to have, you know, listed in the AFL injury list, you know, D. Russell out drugs. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Well, the alternative is that you don't have a voluntary policy at all. Well, so you don't have voluntary testing at all. You just let the players be. And we don't have a system where we try and catch you and we try and help you and then try and rehabilitate you and then try and keep everything secret from everybody through player-doctor confidentiality where the CEO doesn't know, the coach doesn't know. So there's so many different aspects or tentacles to this that seem wrong. Then one of the solutions is to not have a voluntary policy and just go under the wider code. And if you test positive on game day, you're cooked.
Which is every Olympian and every other code I know of in this country as well, Dwayne. That's the thing. So, but if the AFL do that, and then we get instances like Jack Ginnivan, and we get instances like Bailey Smith, maybe we get more of those instances because there is no illicit code, no education around it, no welfare around it. We get more of that. And then the AFL come under fire for, you know, doing nothing, sitting on their hands. How can you not have a policy? So in many ways, They're treading a very high wire here, Dwayne, aren't they, in terms of they're probably damned if they do and damned if they don't. But they've signed up to it. The only reason they signed up to it, the players, was under this proviso, that it was secret. Without it, it wouldn't be in existence at all.
Yeah, I would argue there's a tipping point then. So if we have no voluntary policy and we just have the WADA code where if you test positive on match day, you're cooked, you're out for whatever it is, 4 years, and two players test positive during a year of football, then we'll probably think, well, it's two of 850. It's not so bad. But if it's a larger number, if it's heading to the double figures, then all of a sudden the AFL's got a massive problem that it's opened itself up to.
Mm, yeah. This is all true. It's a very, very complex space and a complex debate. I see an unlikely source of support for the AFL came from, well, I say unlikely, I don't want to speak for him, but Richard Ings, the former ASADA CEO, who did tweet moments ago, "I applaud the AFL system in this area. Sport Integrity Australia does zero testing out of competition for illicit drugs. SIA effectively," Richard says here, "turn a blind eye to illicit drug use. The AFL does not turn a blind eye. The AFL tests for illicit drugs and stands players down if positive. Applause AFL."
Yeah, and Andrew Dillon said, this is not one or two. This has helped a number of players. So I can imagine in my own mind that if the AFL didn't have this system, we might have had, and I shouldn't even throw a number up there, but say we had 15 players who were suspended for 4 years. Then all of a sudden, we haven't really helped those players at all. We've not only stopped them, we've not only allowed them to go and play when the AFL system doesn't allow a player essentially to play with illegal drugs in their system. So they're protecting the player from playing on a day where he might be susceptible to have something horrific happen. And he's going to be playing against other players where he could, you know, do something with that in his system. So the AFL's got a system at the moment that stops that from happening. If the AFL all of a sudden doesn't have that system and we have, you know, 15 players odd test positive and they're out for 4 years, and those players all don't have, you know, their lives are just destroyed by the fact that they didn't get preemptive help.
Yeah.
Then it hasn't worked either, has it?
And no, and we've got some of the biggest names in the game who have lived this experience, Dwayne. That is the fact. We're talking Hall of Famers, superstars, those who are known to everyone, who have had their issues earlier in their career, who have gone through this policy and gone on to have the careers they have had. Now, the AFL is saying that is because of the policy they've got in place. If they've been named, shamed, and, you know, some people here listening and texting throughout the day are all for the one strike, well, then they're lost to the game forever. But they've changed behaviour, changed the way they've got. People don't like to hear that, but it is the truth. There are case studies on this, and that's what the AFL are wedded to.
So let me give you one more alternative before we move on to some other stuff, and Tom Duday's injury is a big one. The other alternative to not having a voluntary policy at all, so the players don't even get tested at all under voluntary circumstances, is to have a policy where they do get tested voluntarily, but we do get told that player X has tested positive this week to a voluntary test, and he's out for 2 weeks.
Mm.
So then all of a sudden, there is a deterrent because you are going to get named, but we still have a system to help you. So you're only out for 2 weeks. Yeah, you're going to get named. And the 20 to 30-year-olds in society now are going to be less upset by some guy putting his hand up and getting 2 weeks because he had an indiscretion than maybe the 50 and 60-year-olds who think there should be a zero policy, because the 20 and 30-year-olds know what society's like right now.
Yeah, well, then in that case, then the AFL players and the AFL Players Association, who just released a statement I'll get to in a moment, would have to do a complete 180, Dwayne. That would take a massive shift for them, because, as I said, the only reason they signed up in the first place was that they wouldn't be identified. And in their statement today, they do go on to say they support the AFL's position, and they say, we reiterate that the illicit drugs policy is entered into voluntarily by the players on the basis it is a medical model and is focused on identifying, educating, and rehabilitating. So they've doubled down on that again today. So that's where it sits at the moment. So I can't see that changing, even under the new IDP, even under the new illicit drugs policy. So it's going to be a source of conjecture for possibly forever and a day.
So what if player X next week, he pulls out of the game pre-the game, and he walks up to the media after that and says, here's my scan. Here's my hamstring scan. Here's a big circle. Here's the reason I pulled out. I said hamstring awareness. Here's my scan as proof. And we don't have any conjecture. Could we start seeing that happen, perhaps?
No, I hope not. I hope not. I hope just the word is enough. But it won't be for some people. Of course it won't. But look, Dwayne, there's conjecture about everything in the game. I mean, the AFL can't be, and players can't be bending over backwards to straighten everything out. I mean, you know, choose your battles, I suppose.
All right, Tom Duday's out. Chris Fagan's spoken about it. I saw him at the press conference earlier today. He had a number of things thrown at him, but Tom Duday's the biggest one immediately.
Absolutely. And Chris Fagan had a big day yesterday because he was down in Melbourne for the conciliation talks through the Human Rights Commission, of course, alongside Alistair Clarkson and those who accused the two coaches of racism in their time at Hawthorn. He got a text message, Dwayne, about the news on Duday, and this is how he addressed the news with the media today over his new recruit being injured again.
You know, he's made himself a really popular member of our team since his arrival. He's a real leader. We're looking forward to having him in our team. Unfortunately, that's not going to be the case this year, but that's the reality of football. I mean, we've lived that now for the last... I worked it out last night. The last 10 rounds of footy we've played, we've lost three blokes with ACLs. I've never seen a strike rate like that. I hope it stops. But you just, this is the game. You know, you've got to deal with it, and we will.
So they say 8 ACLs in one season's low, Dwayne, and 20 is high. That takes us to 9 if you count Duday's partial ACL tear. And most seem to happen early in the season, don't they? We get a glut of them at the start.
I'll ask Dr. Peter Larkins after the break, rather than ask me.
Yes.
He's got no idea why.
I'd love his take on that. I'd love his opinion on that.
All right, the doctor come. Anything else to leave us with before you depart?
Well, just on the conciliation talks while we're on the subject. So the first face-to-face meeting, isn't it, between those Hawthorn players led by Cyril Rioli and his partner. And I guess the coaches, Alistair Clarkson continuing down there today and Chris Fagan as well, their first chance to speak, put their feedback forward. He was asked a question in the press conference today. You can understand the response. But this was Chris Fagan on that topic earlier today.
Conciliation continues today. You know, all of us that have participated have agreed to keep everything pretty much in-house. So if there is a point in time where I can talk about it, I will. But for now, I've just got to let it be and let the process work. So I hope you can respect that. But that's just where it's all at the moment. There's confidentiality around it, and that's what's required to get honesty. So that's where it's at.
So that's Chris Fagan. Just before I leave you, Brad's got interesting press comments today, Dwayne. He was asked about all manner of things as well. But the Peter Wright incident, he said, the Essendon barristers investigated every possible avenue they could to challenge it and explore a not guilty plea. So they were prepared to really explore taking it on fully. The advice was that there was no avenue and every avenue shut by AFL rules. In fact, Scott said that their understanding was they either plead guilty, Dwayne, in an attempt to get the recommended 4 weeks down to three. But if they didn't do that and they fought the fight, he said they were likely to get 6 weeks plus. So the remorse might have saved Peter Wright a suspension of greater than 6 weeks. He was asked about the Essendon edge. Very pleased with the player's intent. Maximum effort at all times. They get a tick for the edge.
So who told Brad Scott that he might get six?
Well, it sounds as though he was intimating that it was feedback from the AFL that that if they took it on, it was going to be 6 weeks plus. Showing remorse, they got it. Right. They got it to four. Kept it at four.
So there was advice to plead guilty, was there?
Yeah, well, I mean, they are in conversations all the time. I might have reported yesterday that the AFL indicated to Essendon what they were going to push for. Yeah. Now, that's done with all clubs so that clubs can best prepare their defence. Now, they did explore every single avenue. I think Jared Waitley was saying there was, an amount of sympathy out there for Peter Wright, the situation he found himself in. But look, the league has closed that many loopholes over the last half a dozen years. It's increasingly difficult to find a legal avenue to get a player off. And we've seen that remorse can cut a couple of weeks from the sentence. Now, we weren't sure where that happened last night because the AFL pushed for four and they got the four. But we're hearing from Brad Scott, it could have been worse.
We'll let you get home. You've had a long day. Great to have you, Sammy. For RJ Sanderson and Associates, accountants and taxation specialists, take the stress out of tax.
On Deck Business Loans for up to $250,000. Apply in just minutes. Go to ondeck.com.au today.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Always great to have your company for Dwayne's World for On Deck Business Loans up to $250,000. The number one medico in the business. Dr. Peter Larkins has been good enough to join us in between consultations. Doc, great to have you on. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Dwayne. Always nice to talk with you.
So I won't keep you long because I know you've probably got a couple of patients in the waiting room ready to go. The news today, how surprising was...
Listening to you, Dwayne. Listening to you at the moment.
Cheerio. Well, to all of you in the waiting room, you're seeing the best in the business. It's worth the wait. I've sat in there and read those magazines too. And check out the latest house magazine that he's got there. There's some great renovations you can do on your own home. Peter, were you surprised by the news last night?
I'm sort of surprised it took this long to go public, Dwayne. Right. I mean, the illicit drug policy is, a confidential program that all 18 clubs have been using since 2005. And the self-reporting by a player where he can come to me if I'm the club doctor and say, geez, Doc, I think I went off track last night at my mate's birthday. That's been around for at least a decade. And so the intention there was to try to get behind why the player had taken cocaine, ecstasy, MMDA, whatever he'd taken. And this was the no punishment program. It was the medical welfare program. Sam's covered off most of my good points here, Sam. But so the issue, it's been happening for a long, long time, not just at Melbourne. Now, Melbourne maybe has had a few more, and that needs to come out as to whether there was repeat offenders. But any player, and there's been many clubs that have had a player come to them and be self-reported, be tested midweek, tested for an illicit and then not allowed to play. And then, unfortunately, this is where the ethical dilemma for the doctors is really they've struggled with, Dwayne. Then an excuse has to be a reason for withdrawing them from Saturday's or Friday's or Sunday's game. And that's often they're managed, they pull a hamstring, they have a back spasm. And that's where it's been tricky. But at the end of the day, the doctor is required confidentially to protect the player's medical information from the coach and from the AFL.
So what will change, do you think, when they redo this policy? Do you think that players will accept having their name put out there and be happy to accept that I'm missing because of this problem that I've got when I'm getting it treated?
No way, no way. I cannot for 1 minute think that the, I think you alluded to it before, that the actual honest reason for a player missing this Friday night is going to be because they've tested positive to cocaine on Thursday. I mean, you know, so it's the solution is not easy as to where we go next. And so the issue is, you know, do we have one code only? Because this is not the WADA code. This is not the performance code. This is the so-called welfare code, which has intercepted people that have gone off track and put them on the straight and narrow, and they've had counselling and drug rehabilitation, and no one's ever heard about it in the media. Now, the issue I've got is, you know, if we take it away, we don't test for them, you don't know about it, they're going to turn up on a weekend and get tested potentially, and then we've got the Joel Smith situation again, Dwayne. Or we're just going to have a rampant, you know, and again, we're not saying it's not in society, but I don't have a solution for that. This is going to be more discussions during the season, both at AFL medical level and AFL administrative level, and Players Association, the third wheel there.
The number one doctor in the land, Dr. Peter Larkins, has been good enough to stick around. So, Doc, yes, the self-reporting system that we've got now stops or helps stop a player playing with an illegal drug in their system. Are we in more danger of having a heart attack or something go wrong if we allow a player to play with an illegal substance in their system and then get caught by WADA post-game?
The answer is, yeah, the potential's there, depending on which illicit substance we're talking about. And the primary ones are stimulants. So we're talking cocaine, amphetamine base, where your heart rate goes up, your alertness goes up. But it also does affect your blood pressure. It does affect your ability to lose heat in perspiration and heat dissipation. So overheating and things can happen. So arguably, not a heart attack, but a heart rhythm problem would be the way I'd express it, Dwayne, where they might get an arrhythmia or a tachycardia or go into some sort of rhythm problem that we've seen in certain players, plus the exhaustion from not realising you're fatigued, and plus the heat stress, you know, in the early parts or the latter part when the weather's warm. So they're all the dangers of playing if it's a high enough. I mean, if you took something on a Tuesday, Wednesday, you're going to have a low level in by Saturday. If you took it on a Friday night, you're at higher risk. Mm-hmm. So that's the simple answer. They're mostly amphetamines, and therefore there is a risk in vulnerable people for sure. And, you know, do they performance enhance? It's always an argument. I think they do because of what I just said. They're stimulants. Mm. So alertness, reflexes, you know, hand-eye coordination all go up if you're on an adrenaline-like drug.
So there's one here on the text. I actually think the AFL and the players have a world-leading approach to early intervention and harm minimisation. That's from Bill in Hobart. Is where do you see this policy the AFL's got, the voluntary policy, as opposed to the way other sports run their sport?
Yeah, well, it's always been lauded as world-leading. And I remember when it was introduced and having discussions, if you remember the famous Dr. Harry Unglick, who was the medical advisor, and Peter Harcourt were there at the time, and Andrew Demetriou. And so it was world-leading best intervention policy. So there weren't many sports around the world. Obviously, even, you know, American sports don't even subscribe to WADA, like American football and NBA doesn't. But in terms of a voluntary policy where players were willingly submitting, it was certainly an innovation. It was always fraught with danger. I was never a three-strike fan. I felt that was very flawed because it gave people too many times to transgress and not get into trouble. Now it's a two-strike policy, which you'd argue is better. But the testing isn't that regularly or that thorough, so players do roll the dice knowing they're going to get away with it. So it's not a perfect policy, but certainly it was innovative, and it was certainly well backed by the drug and counselling services saying it was a good thing.
Hmm. And legally, if the AFL wipes this policy away now and a player does play with a substance and injures himself or injures someone else, I mean, I know you're not a man with legal background, but that could be an issue too.
Well, that's Andrew Dillon's legal background coming in there, yes, of course, Dwayne, but the answer is, you know, are you voluntarily exposing yourself to a risk that you didn't need to because you played with a substance that you weren't allowed to? So I think as a non-lawyer, I'd really say, gee, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to blame the club or the AFL if you sustained an injury because the AFL didn't test you prior to the game and stopped playing. So that really is drawing a long bow, and I wouldn't buy into that.
And doctors do have to keep their patients' issues confidential, even from partners and kids and all that kind of stuff, even though the doctor might think it's in the best interest of the patient to divulge it. Obviously, if they get asked not to, they don't.
Yeah, this is the ethical, you know, challenge of the doctor, who they're responsible to. Well, you know, in all the medical world and medical insurances and medical defence, it's the patient. The patient's the player. It's not the club or the coach or the AFL or the league. So the doctors have an ethical responsibility to do the best thing they can by that player's knee injury, that player's shoulder injury, the player's concussion, or in this case, their mental health or drug transgressions. And so they're not supposed to discuss it. It's signed off as a particular contract between AFLPA and the players, as you know, voluntarily. And the doctors have bought into that since 2005, as I repeat myself, Dwayne. So, and you're not supposed to talk about it. I mean, you hear rumours and there are occasions, you know, where you hear about players but are missing for, and I wonder why, because you don't know they're injured. But it's never been discussed in the public forum until in Parliament. And again, it's because of this Melbourne dilemma, which is quite extensive. It goes well beyond what Dr. Z Rain has been saying.
Mm. And what do doctors report to their CEO or to the AFL? Do they report a number at the end of the year? Do they report we've had three voluntary?
Yeah. Well, it's more of a league report rather than a club by club. So it's even de-identified as a club. So the league is curious to know if the system's working naturally, because you have to decide if it's worth doing. And so there is a confidential de-identified by club and obviously by player name to say, look, we've had, let's make up a number, Dwayne. We've had 15 interceptions this year where players who self-reported or were caught in the illicit testing and had a first strike where it doesn't get into the media publicly. And so the AFL wants to know that its system has been effective. And hence, because it happens every year, and I mean every year, players get caught and it doesn't go public, the AFL would say it's worked. And they'd say that they've got some people back on track because they've entered a rehabilitation program, they've entered a counselling program. The real problem is the repeat offenders, as I said, and this is where it remains to be seen whether certain clubs have had, you know, you could put your hand up every second week, Dwayne, and say I'm doing them. They're the ones that I'm really concerned about. But the genuine ones the AFL wants to know about, but they don't get the player's name or they don't know club by club.
So the doctor, each 18 club doctors anonymously give the AFL their number, but the AFL doesn't know which club that number came from.
But to my understanding, that's right. So the AFL and Andrew Dillon and the advisory committee will say, you know, is our policy worth keeping? Is it working? And they'll say, yep, they'll get a report from the AFL medical advisor who confidentially will let them know that there's been, again, I made up the number. Who were intercepted through the program, put into a counselling program, only had one positive and no second strike, for example, and therefore it is worthwhile because we've saved those 15 from being repeat users because they accepted they made a mistake. They put their hand up and they're not continuing. Now, if you got the same, if you're a club doctor, this is where it gets tricky. If you're a club doctor and you've self-reported three times to me in a season, I'm going to get really annoyed with you, Dwayne, right? And I'm going to really kick you up the bum. And so that's where it becomes tricky because I'm still not allowed to report you if you've come to me three times because of the confidentiality. So I'd be really having a heart-to-heart with you and say, Dwayne, I'm not going to keep protecting you. This is not fair. And sadly, I think there's been an occasions of that in the last decade. But it's the AFL never gets told about that either.
Hmm. So, and it only counts the first time as a strike, doesn't it? So you can report third, fourth, fifth times, but only your first one is a strike. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, this is if it's done with the self-reporting.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Correct. Yeah. You can self-report 10 times and it goes nowhere except between you and me if you come to me 10 times with the knowledge of it. But if it's done with the illicit drug testing people who can be there on a match day or can be there at training tonight, and they test you, the first time it stays confidential and you'll get intervention and a warning. If it's done the second time, so it's not the club doctor doing it, this is the illicit drug people from Dorovitch Pathology doing it on behalf of the AFL program. If you have a second one, that's when it hits the news and you get a high fine and a sanction. So you do get a publicly named if you transgress twice under the testing program during the week, but not the independent one done by the clubs.
And anecdotally, I mean, the club doctors you know very well are not going to tell you names and specific cases, but I'm sure you've heard whether there has or hasn't been players saved by this policy. Do you think there has been players saved by this policy?
Yeah, 100%.
For their lives?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I have. Look, I mean, I think the doctor's welfare, you know, the doctors have got a genuine welfare concern for the players. And so they would argue that they've had some really good wins over a period of time for players who were perhaps younger in the system and got caught up in the nightlife and their mates. And you know, and it's only happened for a very short time and they've been saved. And I think that's, again, why the doctors are bought into it, because they can see the results of that labour, I suppose, in terms of saving somebody. And, you know, and then, you know, you might still keep talking to that person. You might even target testing, you know, if you've got a good relationship with that player. And because they stay negative, you know you've had a win, because they've kept off and they admit that they just went off track accidentally.
Great to have you, Doc. Before you go, Tom Duday, ACL, how long is this second one going to take? And was his recovery sort of on the shorter time frame anyway?
Yeah, look, number nine. I mean, I did a thing yesterday where we talked about the eight so far in the AFL, and I said, look, it'd be really disappointing if I've got to talk about another one in the next week, but it's quite likely because it's early season. It's the player intensity. It's the harder grounds coming off the summer and the warm weather. So there are reasons why you have a spike in the first 4 to 5 rounds. And again, not talking specifically, but certainly coming back within the 12 to 14 month is certainly a much higher risk. And again, this is the time of the year when you're likely to do it. It's like two mountain peaks, Dwayne. You have a rise at the start of the season, then a bit of a valley during the mid-year as players settle down and the intensity and the winter weather comes in, particularly the outdoor stadiums. And then you have a second mountain peak in that August-September time when people are really vying for the finals or getting fatigued. And so the peak we're seeing now is traditional, but nine is a high. I've seen nine before, and we've ended up with 24 or 25 for the season. So that is a really bad start to the season. But I've also seen a high peak where it's just dropped away and we only have three more conversations, you and I, for the rest of the year. It's so unpredictable, despite all these years of looking at why ACLs happen. But it's a bad start to the year, and these normal starts, we end up with 20-plus, and I think that's a bad sign. But no new news on how to prevent them. Just it's bad luck.
Or don't start. Are you warning the AFL not to start the season as early next year, or don't start it any earlier?
That's been shown to be a factor. And again, if we talk back without going too far off track, the AFL women's season, when it was earlier in the season, remember how we had so many women's ACLs happening, like 10, 12 in a 6-week period. And there were multiple reasons why the women have a higher incidence. But part of it was they were playing too early in the season on much harder grounds, much drier grounds. And yes, they're not as strong, and yes, they haven't grown up playing footy since 3 years of age. So there's other reasons, but that sort of high incidence in the season affected the women's season before the AFL looked at putting it at a different time of the year. And I think the earlier we start practice matches, and as I said, if we go back, you've got Dan McStay, you've got Silvani, you've got Doherty, you've got Coleman, you've got Blanche, you've got Gibkiss, you've got Bailey Smith, and now, you know, we've had some really serious ones this year, which I'm hoping it's just a blip, but it has happened before and it always happens. So I don't know whether we just say we're going to start in March. I don't know whether that's, you know, in terms of practice matches, but it would change the whole fabric of the way the season, because they're trying to make a longer season. I don't think the players and the fitness guys want that, Dwayne.
Doc, great to have you. Dr. Peter Larkins, you know the voice. If you know the voice and you know the name and you love what he's got to say, you can read Dr. Peter Larkins' book, which is out. It's called The Healthy 100, 100 Ways to a Healthier, Happier and longer life. There's things in there about understanding how and why we age, starting an exercise program and why exercise is medicine, looking after your mental health. It's all there. It's in Dr. Peter Larkin's book, which is out right. It is out now. Doc, when's it out?
It was out on Friday, Dwayne. It's all right. Over the airport. I've had mates. So, yeah, it's in all the major bookstores, Amazon, Booktopia, drpeterlarkins.com. And if you're going through the airport, it's even in the airport bookshops.
As it would be, Doc, in all good bookshops, it should be. The great Dr. Peter Larkins, you can find that book, The Healthy 100. It's even got a preamble by Kathy Freeman. Let me read that. To all you lovers of life who seek a simple yet effective guide to living well beyond 100, read Dr. Peter Larkins' book. Everyone will take away learnings to apply to their own lives from his practical advice. And what a delight it is to have him on to get his practical advice on the show.